During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
The Guardian.
I'm determined to work tirelessly in the coming years, up to the next general election, to show we can change this country so it works for you. And above all, so that Britain changes from a country that works for a few people at the top to a country that works for everybody. And I know that David Cameron promised change and has disappointed people. I'm determined that we can deliver Britain the change it needs.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. And for Labour, it has been a week to savour, with one notable exception.
Thank you very much, Mr. Returning Officer. I thank you to everybody who got the results.
Boris Johnson has proved more popular than his party. And although Ken Livingstone took him all the way to the wire, he did enough to secure a second term as mayor. But bad news has poured in from nearly everywhere else in the country for the Conservatives. And things weren't much better for the Lib Dems, who dropped below 3,000 council seats for the first time since their party was formed. We'll hear from our experts all around the country about what it means. But first, let's head to City Hall on the banks of the Thames and to our London politics expert, Hugh Muir. Hugh, explain what's happened in London. What's the margin and was it a surprise?
Well, he won by 65,000 votes. And was it a surprise? Well, actually, there was some to-ing and fro-ing towards the evening where people were saying, you know, it's very close and Ken might just shade it. But most of the sophologists here were pretty confident that Boris was going to win. And most of the Labour people, even quite early in the day, were pretty resigned to the fact that their man was not going to prevail. It was a very sad, ashen-faced Ken Livingstone who made quite a reasonably graceful concession speech. There was some stuff in there about him having taken a battering from the media, and he complained about it having been all the negative campaigning. He also said it would be his last campaign, and that he was very sad that he'd let down a lot of people by not being able to take the mayoralty. And I think that will be what people are talking about tomorrow, because, you know, when you look at this in the cold light of day, they really ought to have taken the mayoralty. The Tories are very unpopular. The core Labour policy was, of course, to paint Boris Johnson as a Tory. They weren't able to do that. And that must be part of the reason why the Conservatives hold on to City Hall.
Looking forward now to the Boris Johnson second term, do you think it's going to be different? I mean, it felt pretty policy-light, this whole campaign. It was all about Boris's character and Ken's tax returns, wasn't it? Do you think we're going to see anything practical change in relation to London?
Boris Johnson said a very interesting thing in that he was very grateful that the electorate had given him another chance to have another go. And that seems to be an acknowledgement to me that, you know, many people don't think that he's done much with his first 4 years. I think it will have a different quality to it because, of course, he is now seen nationally as the Tory who can win when other Tories aren't winning. And so I think that, he was obviously a top name figure before, but I think people will be looking at him in a different light. There may well be a whole new level of scrutiny about what he does. This hasn't been, many would say this hasn't been the most competent administration, but no one's really been detailing what's been happening day to day. He may find that there's a lot more attention paid to what he does next time round. But if you look at the manifesto, he fought on a 9-point programme, but none of that programme really is specific in terms of big project. Big vision project.
No, it's like get a better deal for London for out of number 10 and stuff like that, isn't it?
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, where's the Crossrail project? Where's the extra tube lines? Where are the big things that are the sort of things that you associate with a strategic mayor? So one does wonder if he wants to be in the same position at the end of another 4 years, where people are looking at what he's done and saying, well, actually, Boris, you didn't really do that much.
Unless, of course, the real strategy is a strategy to get Boris into number 10, as you were sort of half alluding to there, and as Ken Livingstone was cheekily alluding to in his concession speech. Do you think that some of those Tory bloggers who are out there saying the only thing worse than Boris losing tonight for David Cameron is Boris just winning and looking a bit more looking like he might give Labour a better run for its money than Cameron himself can?
Well, he's a problem now, because you know how it works within the Tory party. As long as everything is going well, then you know the likes of the 1922 committee will be happy. But when things aren't going well, they start looking around and saying, well, you know, here we have Cameron, and he's doing all this touchy-feely hugger-hoodie stuff, and that doesn't seem to be putting clear blue water between us and our opponents, and it means that we have to get into the bed with the Liberal Democrats. Wouldn't it be much better if we had someone who shows that he can win, who shows that he can win against the odds when other Tories are losing? Boris seems to have a kind of Tory Viagra. And, you know, at what stage will Tory MPs, especially on the right, become so disgruntled that they say, well, why don't we just get ourselves a man who can win?
Hugh Muir there at City Hall. Well, let's cross from London now up to Glasgow, where another big match-up was taking place this week. The SNP had hoped to continue its run of big election shock successes and take control of Glasgow's City Council. Our man there is Severin Carroll. So, Sev, what's happened?
Well, in Glasgow, Labour have not only retained control, they've actually increased the number of seats they effectively had at polling day. You've got to remember that the Labour Party suffered some very, very damaging internal feuding. They had purged 20 councillors that they thought were underperforming and just simply not good enough. They have had problems about their previous leaders, difficulties with resignation under very, very difficult circumstances with alcohol and drug abuse problems. And the SNP were very, very confident that they were in pole position to at least knock Labour's crown off. And in fact, Labour have come back even stronger than many of us were expecting them to. Now, the problem is for Alex Salmond is that the Glasgow result is not the only bad news that he's had today, because Labour have also become the largest party in Edinburgh, where the SNP have been in coalition control with the Liberal Democrats. And Labour are also now the largest party in Aberdeen. They now have four councils in overall control across Scotland, where they only had two. So it's not been a very good day at all for Alex Salmond. And frankly, most political commentators in Scotland would be confounded and surprised by that, not necessarily Glasgow on its own.
You've mentioned there are a number of places where the SNP have fallen back relative to expectations. There have been some towns, haven't there, and cities where they've made some advances.
Oh, indeed. No, they have. I mean, you know, you cannot take all the gloss off this, because the SNP is still won for the first time overall control of Scottish councils. Those are Dundee and Angus. Now, they've also made other gains in Perth, and are the largest parties in Perth, Stirling and North Ayrshire. Now, you know, of course, they have to do coalition deals with the Tories in particular, many of these places. That will be difficult, of course, because with Alex Salmond in control at the Scottish Government and in the Scottish Parliament, they are almost certainly going to be offering these other parties little sweeties in all of these places to try and build the coalitions that they now need. But it is far from the significant, huge result that Salmond was expecting. You've got to remember that in a few weeks' time, we're expecting Salmond to launch the SNP's independence campaign, and he would have been really hoping for a significant boost to that campaign, just like a great big trampoline bounce into this victory march to independence. And that's really been derailed somewhat by this.
The Guardian Scotland correspondent Severin Carroll there. Well, from Glasgow, now to Cardiff. Labour had a terrible time of it in Wales back in 2008 under Gordon Brown. Our correspondent Steve Morris is there now, and he's been up all night. Steve, a different story this time around.
Absolutely. Labour are delighted with how they fared this year. I was also here last year for the Assembly elections, when they did pretty well. They got 30 of the 60 seats then. And at that time, they said, we're going to do really well this time next year. And they really have. They're absolutely delighted.
So where did it all go right for them then?
Well, they're kind of the towns, some of the towns you'd expect them to do well, they lost when Gordon Brown was very unpopular as a Prime Minister. Places like Swansea and Newport in the south. Also further in the north, the town of Wrexham. They've done well there. But the real star, the jewel in the crown, is Cardiff, where they have done amazingly well. They started off with 14 councillors, All the votes aren't in yet, but they reckon, they've just been telling me, they think they might get something like 44.
And that would give them an overall majority in Cardiff.
Yep, they would be in control of Cardiff City Council for the first time in 8 years. The Lib Dems have been in charge for the last 8 years in various ways. First as a minority government, a minority council, and then acting in coalition with Plaid. But no, that would give Labour overall control and a handsome majority as well.
So that result in Cardiff then brings us on from the winners to the losers. You've got a four-party system in Wales as well as a lot of independents. If Labour's up, who's going down?
Everybody else. Nobody's done very well at all. The Lib Dems have done very badly here as everywhere. They were governing in those places I've mentioned, again in various forms. Wrexham, Swansea, Newport, they're out of power there. They've lost in Cardiff. The Conservatives have done quite badly in some of their heartland constituencies, such as the Vale of Glamorgan and Monmouthshire. Plaid Cymru haven't done very well, even though they've got a shiny new leader, Leanne Wood, who everybody was very excited about. She's only been in the job a few weeks and months, so she needs a bit more time to get herself sorted, I think. But they haven't done too well. Independents have lost seats as well. Labour has just done really, really well.
Well, so much for Scotland and Wales. It was in England where the majority of seats were being contested, and the fortunes of the Conservative Party and their Lib Dem coalition partners was to be sorely tested. After the so-called omni-shambles that fell out of the budget, there's also been a run of stories about sleaze and, of course, a double dip on the economy, and so the parties in power were always going to struggle. And they did. Well, earlier on, I caught up with The Guardian's data journalist and polling expert, James Ball, and we were joined down the line by our columnist, Martin Kettle. I began by asking James how it had all played out in England.
It looks a lot as if Labour have hit the targets that the academics and the independents were setting for them. It will be a big surprise if they're not looking at least 700 council gains across England and Wales, and they're picking up a lot more councils. I mean, they've picked up at least 20 new ones there, beating the Lib Dems and they're beating the Conservatives. So despite the fact there may be bad news for them elsewhere, it does look as if on the ground they've achieved what they set out to do.
And do you think, I mean, last year, 2011, there was a decent Labour showing, mostly at the expense of the Lib Dems, but the Conservatives ended the night up by taking sufficient seats from the Liberal Democrats in the south. Are we seeing a similar pattern this time, or is the pain much more evenly spread?
No, the Conservatives are probably having an even worse night than the Liberal Democrats this time. Their resilience in the south of England has not sustained this time. And interestingly, when the coalition partners go up against each other, the Lib Dems are holding their own. They've even taken a couple of seats off the Conservatives. The Lib Dems actually are holding up in the south quite well. They're down 6 points on 2008 in the south versus 12 in the north. So the Conservatives aren't as resilient in the south as they were, but the Lib Dems are actually shoring up there.
Martin, Labour sceptics of Ed Miliband have often warned that he wasn't the man to sort of end the southern discomfort that set in with the last election. Do you think he'll have seen off some of his doubters overnight, or has he not done quite enough?
I think he's probably done okay enough in the short term to still those stories for the moment. Everything, you know, is very volatile. And so, you know, I guess if there was a bad by-election loss like the Bradford one a month ago, that would all start up again. But, I mean, it's a good night for Labour. They've progressed. They've taken a number of local authorities, which they need to take and need to rebuild the vote if they're going to win those kind of constituencies. And, you know, so, I mean, overall, it's been a good set of results for the Labour Party. I mean, I think the big thing that has happened, my sense of it in England, is that it's been, I think James was sort of hinting at this, you know, it's been a bad night for the Conservatives. Overall, Tory share of the vote is down 4%. Compared with last year, Lib Dems flatlining, Labour's up, and others are up. So it's the Tories who are the big losers in the last 24 hours.
I mean, I'm looking at just some individual councils across the country almost at random. I don't know, Amber Valley, Basildon, Gloucester, very different sort of places and geographically a long way away. But the pattern in all of them is much the same, which is that the Labour are picking up quite a few seats from the Conservatives, although not very often enough to take the council, because of course only a third of the seats are up at any one time, and it's not, they're not taking quite as many, of course, as they would have been doing in the mid 90s under Tony Blair, Martin.
That is true. This is not as good as it was then. But that on the other hand, you know, Labour has come back faster from its decline under Gordon Brown. So, you know, I think relatively speaking, Labour is actually stronger historically right now than perhaps it was at 20 years ago. And, you know, that's, you know, Labour is not going to go away, which is one of the things that people did think might have been the case 20 years ago. Yeah, I mean, looking at those local authorities where there have been changes, I mean, you know, you take a place like Harlow, which Labour won in Essex. That's an absolute bellwether kind of place. It's a straight Labour-Tory fight. Look at Thurrock, which Labour won also in the south, also a kind of a swing parliamentary area, always goes Labour or Tory. What happened in Thurrock is that UKIP really hammered the Tory vote. That's an interesting factor, that UKIP has actually begun to have some impact. Now, will that be repeated at a general election? That's hard to say at this stage in the cycle, but it will certainly be flagging up a lot of worries when we get around to the European elections in 2 years' time, that UKIP could do extremely well just a year before the general election, and the Tories will be the main losers from that.
And thereby potentially change the dynamic of that general election. Now, James, could you just tell us a little bit about the minor parties? We heard a lot about a plague on all your houses kind of messages from the electorate before yesterday's votes. There's not just UKIP, who Martin mentioned, but the BNP, Greens and so on. How have these parties done?
I mean, the minor parties seem to be doing quite well on vote share, but not well on seats. They are actually down for all that we're talking about their strengths. But in terms of UKIP and the Greens, this is where the interesting action is. The UKIP have contested more than 1,000 council seats. And so far, they're averaging about 14% in the polls on those, which is potentially hugely damaging to the Conservatives. Mm. And you can see, given they're also losing seats to the Lib Dems, why this is going to be a cause for nervousness over the next few weeks. But the Greens' strong showing does take away from Labour, maybe not to the same kind of challenge, but they've contested even more council seats than UKIP and are averaging about 9%. So decent showing for both parties. I think they'll be quite pleased, even if it doesn't translate into many gains. The BNP, on the other hand, are absolutely being annihilated. They've lost at least 9 of their 12 council seats they're defending, and they look set to lose all of them, plus potentially their assembly member.
So a very bad night for the BNP. But those other minor parties, I mean, and UKIP in particular, Martin, I mean, you mentioned those European elections. You can imagine now some of the Conservatives, maybe some of the Conservatives who would have already wanted David Cameron to be doing some more populist things on law and order or taking a tougher stand about Europe. If they're in their backyards, they're seeing UKIP scoring 15%, they're really going to be shouting through a megaphone at him now, aren't they, about, oh, look, you know, we've got the European election to go through and then the general election, and there's a real threat on the right flank.
Yeah, I mean, some of them are already doing that. I mean, we heard Gerald Howarth, very right-wing member of the government, doing that on the radio early today. Interestingly, John Redwood, also very conservative figure, ex-member of the Thatcher, a major cabinet, he was cautioning on that question. So I think, you know, it's not true to say, I think, that there's an undifferentiated demand for a so-called lurch to the right. Can I just put in one thing about today's elections? I think about the plague on both your houses point, I mean, turnout was very bad in these elections. 32%, I think, is the agreed figure for turnout. And that's really poor. It's the worst for 12 years. And I think, you know, there is a sense in which, therefore, people have, this is a grumpy, anti-political kind of moment in the cycle, and that will accentuate people's temptation either not to vote at all, two-thirds of the people didn't vote, which is a huge number, or to vote for minor parties, and that seems to be what has happened.
Another thing that's been going on in England, James, has been a number of referendums on whether to move to an elected mayor. From what we know so far, how's that proposal gone down?
It's really not attracted any enthusiasm. The very few people who bothered to turn out for it, and turn out for it in a lot of these referendums being substantially lower, even the 32% overall, have so far resoundingly come back with no's. I don't think the case was really made in favour of them, and the no arguments seem to have found a lot of traction in the anti-politics movement, saying, do you essentially want to pay for yet another local politician and yet another layer of politics?
But we're in a bit of a bind here, aren't we, Martin? Because people don't like the politics that's on offer, so they're voting for minor parties. But they dislike it so much that when the elite, as it were, comes forward and offers them a reform, like an elected mayor, they say no to that almost on principle. It's a bit hard to know how we get out of this dismal equilibrium, isn't it?
I think that's true. I mean, you know, it's true there was no real kind of oomph behind it. It was another thing like AV on the referendum last year, when in the end people said, no, we don't want one of those changes, thank you very much. Also, they did the same thing in the northeast on regional government a few years back when John Prescott under Labour was pressing it. You know, people, I don't think that political reform is a big issue for most people. So I think political reformers, constitutional reformers, have to kind of wonder whether, if you want to fix the system, isn't the best idea to go ahead, legislate it, and legislate for it to change, and maybe ease up on the feeling that everything's got to be endorsed by a referendum. You know, referendums when people vote in referendums, they very often vote on the question that's in their minds, like, who is proposing this? Do I want to go along with David Cameron's idea or Nick Clegg's idea or John Prescott's idea, rather than on the substance of the matter itself? So, you know, it may be that referendums may become a little bit less fashionable. I say this on the day when Peter Mandelson, elsewhere in the forest, is about to say that there should be another referendum on Europe, however, so I don't think that subject's going to go away.
Can I just ask each of you, if you take a few steps back and a longer sort of sweep of this, we know that governments go through midterm blues, and we know that sometimes, as in the John Major government we talked about before it crashed to defeat, there was a spectacular swing against the government that only partially reversed when Tony Blair got that landslide. But there were also a lot of times in the 1980s, James, when Neil Kinnock looked like he was doing rather well, and then it melted away by polling day. Where would you put this on the scale of midterm blues?
It's still distinctly tentative, really. It's Miliband is doing better than Hague was in the equivalent elections. Hague picked up about 610 seats from a base which was even worse than Labour's. And so it's encouraging for him in that extent. But
he's not doing as badly as William Hague, who went on to add one seat, I think, totally.
Precisely that. It's and that's really kind of where we have to judge the achievement. On the other hand, no sitting prime minister has increased his vote share for an incredibly long time. And so it's really not encouraging for any dreams Cameron might have of having a majority government next term. So in terms of the national picture, it somehow seems to be bad news for all three major parties, really.
Do you think that's right, Martin? Can it be bad news for everyone in terms of the historical precedents?
Well, I think in the sense that people are voting for minor parties more than they were voting for the major parties some years ago, that's probably possible. But, you know, it's a good day for Labour. Labour's advanced, it's reconsolidated itself in various parts of the country from which it had been dislodged. It's continued its process of getting over the disaster of Gordon Brown. And I think in a way, as I said earlier, it's a reminder that the Labour Party rebuilt itself as a very big, credible party of government during the 1990s and the earlier part of the 21st century. And it hasn't lost all of that. Brown threw a lot of it away, but Ed Miliband's got a rather better base from which to rebuild than Neil Kinnock had in the 1980s.
And just very quickly, Martin, let's round off by just having a quick word about each of the coalition parties. James is saying the Lib Dems have done a bit better in some southern seats. We know that they've done very badly in Wales. We know they're likely to do very badly in Scotland and, for that matter, London. Could we be looking at a different Liberal Democrat party, given how important to the base these councillors that are disappearing in the north are, which is much more regional than we've been used to thinking of it as?
I think to some extent that's right. I think we're going back about 20 years now to the Liberal Democrats as they were before they began to see themselves as a left-wing alternative to Labour. I think we're getting a reconsolidation of the Liberal Democrats as a party of the centre rather than an alternative party of the left. People who voted, ex-Labour voters who voted Liberal Democrat under the new Labour government have by and large gone back to Labour now. And so the Liberal Democrats, I think they have, they are possibly consolidating themselves in the centre. I mean, that's not to say I think they're going to hold all their seats in the next general election in the centre, but they are, they haven't lost votes in 2012 compared with 2011. They've lost a lot of seats, but they have lost and they've lost one or two councils. I mean, it's bad for them to lose Cambridge, which they've always held up as being a very good council for them. And losing in Cardiff, where they were the largest single party, is a big humiliation for them. So it's not great for the Liberal Democrats, but it's certainly not as bad as it is for the Tories.
And so. And then with the Tories, David Cameron was arguably always a bit tolerated rather than enjoyed by a large number of his backbenchers. And now he's always had the argument up his sleeve, oh, well, I'm more popular than the party and, I can get the votes in, so you let me take care of the rest. He's going to struggle with that after this, isn't he?
That's the hand he's got to play, isn't it? I mean, In the big picture, nothing much has changed for Cameron. The big question is whether he can change the political weather by persuading people that either he is a better economic custodian than people currently think he is, or that things are working. So, I think that for Cameron, I don't think Cameron is going to be moving to the right anytime soon. He can't do that very much because of the coalition, and I don't think it's what he wants to do anyway. And we're sort of the Tory party has not re-established itself to the extent that that it can afford to move to the right. It's still quite a fragile party in some respects. It's quite striking to look at these results and realise there is not a single Tory councillor, not just in places like Manchester in the north, but there's no Tory councillor in Oxford. There's no Tory councillor in Norwich. There's one Tory councillor in Cambridge. Those are not results from a national party. And, that's the hand that they currently have got dealt to them.
And then finally, James, you've got then these very different pressures on the two coalition parties in different parts of the country. If you were, instead of giving us your cephalological wisdom, advising Nick Cameron and David, I think you know what I mean. If you were advising Mr. Cameron, would you be telling him to strike out more independently of the Lib Dems? And likewise, if you're advising Clegg, would you be advising him to pull away? Are we going to see more differentiation, or do you think we're going to see a pulling together?
I think it's quite a terrifying dilemma for Cameron, in that he is seeing that Nick Clegg is looking most able to defend his party and defend his share up against his coalition partners. So I think you may see a slight movement in Lib Dem rhetoric as they see that's working. The problem for Cameron is UKIP is not traditionally a party of local elections. If it's hitting 14, 15 in council elections, when it comes to the EU elections, they've got a real threat there, and there's limited responses he can make to it. So I think his instinct is going to be to try and absolutely dominate the centre ground, and probably to do that he's going to have to go head-to-head against the Lib Dems and make that his turf, because his right flank does not look safe at the minute.
The Guardian's James Ball and Martin Kettle there. Well, that's all for this week, and if your election thirst still isn't satisfied, you can be reassured we'll be back next time picking over the bones of crucial elections, not just in France, but also in Greece, and asking whether any government in power anywhere can succeed in being popular at the moment. We'll also be taking a look at the Leveson inquiry, where there is a big week coming up. So we're back on Thursday, and until then, my thanks to Hugh Muir, to Stephen Morris, to Severin Carroll, to James Ball, and to Martin Kettle. The producer was Phil Maynard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
During April, The Guardian's podcasts are partnering with audible.co.uk. Audible has over 60,000 digital audiobooks and are offering Guardian podcast listeners one for free. Visit guardian.co.uk/audible to find out more.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.